1, 2, 3.
Welcome to episode 4 of That's Soundacious, a guided tour through the world of independent folk music. I'm John Voorhees, and this week I'll be getting schooled in the zen of busking by one of my musical heroes, David Wilcox, plus a tune by Nashville newcomer Ali Ferris. No one will be seated during the shocking twist ending.
Soundacious. Soundacious. It's the That's Soundacious theme song.
Episode 4, The Tao of Dave. If you've been listening to modern folk for more than a few years, you probably already know who David Wilcox is. He's been playing and recording since the late 80s, and his open-tuned chords and mellow baritone are unmistakable. He's not just an amazing player, but an amazingly positive and thoughtful person, and his songs reflect a sensitive heart and a sense of awe and wonder. Occasionally satire and sarcasm, but mostly a faith in his inner voice and a zen-like embrace of the day-to-day. I've been a Wilcox fan for years, and when I found out he was going to be playing the main stage at the Kerrville Folk Festival this year, I was bound and determined to see it. I never expected that I would have a chance to sit down next to him and hear him hold forth for the better part of an hour on his songwriting philosophy. But that's what happened. And it started with a young performer named Ali Ferris. She showed up at the Camp Stupid Song Circle the first Friday night of the festival, a shining pupil of pianist Julie Bonk, who we've heard from in earlier episodes. Ali was one of the finalists in the University Songwriters Competition last year, but this was her first time camping out, and her first time really getting into the Kerrville experience. She's soft-spoken, but direct, very professionally motivated, and looking to show off her skills, which she certainly did with this song. How is your love tonight?
I'm so sick of the silence when you're gone. Seems this stitch of my heart just to come undone. Hear my tears, never recall. Sew me up like a little cloth doll. Leave me there to fall to disrepair.
Thank you.
The next day was my first experience with a Kerrville tradition called the Ballad Tree. One of the main stage performers hosts an open stage for songwriters at Chapel Hill, the highest point on the Quiet Valley campground. David Wilcox was the host for Saturday, and I wish I had some recordings to share, but the hill was very, very windy and my microphone would have been useless. But Allie was one of the singers that day, singing How Is Your Love Tonight a cappella. No, she didn't bring her keyboard all the way up Chapel Hill. David was sitting on the bench right in front of me, so I worked up my nerve and got him to agree to an interview for the podcast. So, of course, I agonized for the rest of the day over the best questions to ask him, and I pondered it while listening to his terrific main stage performance that night. Turns out, I didn't have to worry, and there really wasn't going to be any point in the interview where I needed to even say a word. When I met David the next day, he was talking to Allie, and he asked me if we could focus the interview on the path of the young singer-songwriter, including Allie, in the conversation. I thought this was a terrific angle, so I led them both under the windy tent of Camp Stupid and set up my microphone. David immediately picked it up and held it like Yorick's skull and said,
"So tell me more, for the sake of both of us, for your questions and my answers. Who is this to? Who is it for? And speaking to?"
"Okay, well, this is to the little man in that microphone." It is for the people who are here on a regular basis.
Ah, okay.
it's both.
That's
it's
cool.
Whoever picks it up. But yes, definitely, it is a matter of a slice of this experience.
Okay, I got an angle. Here we go.
Okay, terrific.
Yeah. "Hey, this is Dave Wilcox. I'm at Kerrville. I love being at Kerrville. I've been coming here for 25 years. And I remember when I first came here, it was kind of bewildering seeing these song circles and hearing these beautiful songs, some of them from people who just started playing, some of them from people who've been playing all their lives. And they were on equal footing. The authority of the song is what spoke, and not any sort of industry credentials. And around the campfire, when you can't even see whose face it is, the character that comes into view is the character in the song. And so you listen and you get transported into these wonderful other worlds where there's beautiful characters and drama, and the song paints a whole beautiful picture. And the fun part and the frustrating part is that, you know, on one level we're all equal and the songs find their way into our hearts with no problem. And on another level, you wonder, how do you ever get your music out there when it's not just a campfire? And I remember, you know, 25 years ago when I was just starting, I had so many questions about, well, what do you do first? Should I buy a sound system? You know, should I get a manager? Should I try to, you know, there was so many questions. And so I think one fun way to talk about this was, last night I got into a conversation with a wonderful songwriter who I just heard for the first time. Allie has just come to Kerrville this year, and you know, she's 20 years old, and she's right where I was way back then when I was feeling like, what do you do next? So I'd like to introduce you to Allie.
Hi.
I forgot your last name. What's
My
your
name
last
name? Allie Ferris.
Allie Ferris. And so I would love to just hear sort of how this festival feels to you, where you're going from here, if you have any questions that might help all of us, you know, the ones who have been doing it for a while and forget how magical it is, the ones who are just starting out and want to get a perspective on sort of how we get to where we're going. So what's on your mind?
Well, like you said, I am 20 years old and this is my first Kerrville experience, and I am starting out. I don't have a manager. I have a friend that is starting to book dates for me. I've never gone on tour, and all I have really are my songs and my ability to play the piano and sing, and I've just been met with open arms. I didn't actually have the money to come here this year, and the friends that I met over this past year helped me to, drove me, flew me, helped me to get here, and even helped me pitch my own tent, so.
And this is your first time camping.
My first time camping.
I love
ever.
That.
Last night was my second night out in the woods, and boy, I do love to take showers, long showers, and I miss that, but for what it's worth, you know, the what's in its place now is an amazing experience with nature. So that's something. And also, also like you said, sitting in a dark circle of songwriters and being feeling like you're a part of something that's original and creative.
And you are definitely a part of it. And it's the authority of your songs that, you know, started us talking. And I love when you hear something and you know that, you know, years from now, people are going to know your name. It's just, it's great. It's great stuff. So, but you must wonder, yeah, well, you can say that with certainty, but surely there must be people who try and try for a lifetime and never get it going. So what do I do, you know?
Exactly. I just moved to Nashville, and that's all I keep hearing is that it takes 10 years, it takes 7 years, it takes just almost a lifetime. Sometimes you never get where you want to get, and all I know is at 15 when I started, I knew that without a doubt music and songwriting and performing is what I wanted to do, and that's all that I was going to do. And so at least I have that compass to guide me, but along the way I have been looking for people that I know are successful and are having wonderful success and love in songwriting and acceptance by their peers, by the people they looked up to. So that's who I'm trying to find to get as much advice as I can to maybe in some way accelerate me on my path.
And I know the frustrating part is when you ask people who have been doing it for a long time, they always sort of look at you wistfully and say, oh, I wish I was back where you are, because everything is so fresh and so new and so fun, and, you know, you're...
And scary.
Yes, and we forget that, we were camping in the back of the car, you know, and it wasn't even a level spot, and it was... So, yes, both are true. The bliss of starting out not knowing where you're going, it's what makes every good story. It's what makes every good movie. You think, how can the hero possibly survive? And if you knew the ending, the movie wouldn't be as good. And we're all saying, oh, don't worry about the ending. It ends great. You'll love it. And yet we see lives that run aground. We see lives where musicians start out with a dream and it seems to be like a blessing and a curse. And so I love to say that, you know, careers are not made with one lucky break, and careers are not made with, you know, some fantastic coincidence. Careers are made with thousands and thousands of tiny decisions. Decisions like, what are you going to have for lunch? Is it really good for you, or is it just another slice of pizza and a beer? What are you going to sort of be reading while you're on tour? What are you going to be filling your mind with? Because, you know, the diet of a road musician is just one element, but it helps to orchestrate everything. And I don't mean just diet like what you take into your body. I mean what you take into your mind, the conversations you have, and sort of how you step by step kind of hold your best intentions in the forefront of your mind and are watching for where are they leading you. And so that kind of discipline is what makes this life really satisfying to me, because then everything becomes music. You know, when you're getting up early to catch a flight, there's music in it. It's part of what you do. And it gets instilled with this gorgeous sense of purpose. And when you're really tired and you still have to take apart all the sound gear and get it in the car and, you know, drive 50 miles or whatever, it's imbued with this sense of there's a reason for this, there's a gift that I'm giving in this. And so what I love about it most, I think, is that it is not easy, and there are a lot of people who give up for very good reasons. But the reason why we choose to do it is because in the difficulty we find a practice that makes us realize the significance of everything in our lives. And the practice involves, for the sake of music, you're willing to go the distance and become the person that's required to keep your attitude right. And in the end, the real musicianship is not just tuning the guitar and getting the chords right and getting the words right. It's getting your attitude right before you ever get to the stage. It's believing that what you do matters because you're part of something that's bigger than you. And even though, you know, you're insignificant in the realm of sort of like who's out there playing, in the specific room that you're in that night, people have come from perfectly comfortable living rooms to listen to something that would change them, that would give them a sense of wonder and give them back their curiosity about what's possible for their lives, for their heart. And so because you're the one there that night in that room, you're not just one ship in a vast sea. You are the one that they're on. You are the one that carries them. And so you have to realize that, you know, you're the captain of the ship. You have to step up and not get in the way with your own doubts. You have to have an attitude of that you care for these people, and for their sake, you know, you believe what's possible when they hear a song that is sort of perfect timing for them and it draws them in. And so I find that because music is so difficult, so humbling, it actually gives us so much more because it requires of us to take everything seriously. Everything matters. And that winds up being the best sort of musicianship of all. So that eventually we find that the joy that we got from songs starts to infuse itself into the rest of our lives. And those thousands of decisions start being reflected in our ability to choose someone to be with that really knows us and really cares for our heart and soul. And our ability to gather people around us that work with us, and we gather them for the same reasons that we gather the chords that we love and the words that we love, because they feel right. And that tuning, that sense of judgment about what feels right, we learn it first in songs, but it really serves us in life. And the same craft that can shape a song that's so true to you can also shape a life that is true to you. And so, luckily, it's ridiculously difficult. Luckily, there are no answers. Luckily, all the advice that you get from everyone is just their advice, and it's their story, and it's not yours. And luckily, what lies ahead for you is a path that will lead you not just to the best songs you've ever written, but the best person you could have become. Because you choose a path day to day that you can't be asleep at the wheel, and you know it. You have to pay attention to every moment, because just like finding a song that's somewhere out there on the circling winds, and you have to listen deeper than you've ever listened, there is this sense of song by song, that's your navigation that guides you into becoming who the music always promised you you could be.
As it started to fall, glass popped, shattered and splattered, and paint spray hit the wall. Bright blue glossy enamel across the kitchen floor. You said, "Good God, look at that pattern. I've never seen that before. Leave it like it is. Never mind the turpentine, just leave it like it is. It's fine."
And what do I mean by the music promised you? I mean that feeling of feeling like you belong in your skin, like you know you're alive. You know what that means to be alive, to be given this breath, to be given this opportunity, to step into this adventure not just like one more day, like, oh, you're going to a job that requires of you to rent your life hour by hour. But no, you're being asked to step into a life that requires you to watch for where your life may be leading you, as if it's some mysterious man in a black cape that disappeared around a corner, but he gave you a look that said, follow me. And he's going down Diagon Alley, and he's disappearing through a wall. And you have to follow, you have to trust, you have to say, this is an adventure, because you're a wizard, Harry. You have music, and you have to follow. And so little by little, it teaches you that, yes, there are dragons, there are fears, there are people whose lives are destroyed by this, and yours will not be, because you care enough for the song that you're willing to care that much for yourself. You care that much for this whole beautiful stirring in your heart that comes through you and says to you, you are part of a journey bigger than you know. These songs are coming from your own future, speaking from the self that you might become, speaking to you through the only oracle they can, from your heart to your mind, through song, through music that moves you. And the reason why it moves you is because it's coming from the place that you are going. It knows you better than you know yourself. This is your glimpse at how good your heart can feel. And song by song, turn by turn, thousands of decisions by thousands of decisions, you follow it. And you find that your life becomes as good as the best song you've ever heard. And miraculously, that's what's happened to me. And my career is nothing. It's like, David who? Nobody knows David Wilcox. It's not like the music is any sort of authority, like, oh wow, he's really cool and he's good and he's blah blah. It's not American Idol. It's not idling around waiting for the lottery to come rescue you from this sort of the throngs of mediocrity and lift you to this royalty as if you were chosen by some great institution. No, it's the opposite of that. It's trusting that the judgment does not come from on high. It comes from within. It comes from the guidance that leads you to not one little miraculous occasion in your life, but slipping through coincidence after coincidence, like doors that click locked behind you. And you have this miraculous luck that opens because you listen, because you watch for what feels right. And in the same way that you build a song that feels right, you're always listening for that. Where are we going? How do I know what my best life would feel like? And so you, in order to, if you were like guiding your way through the woods, you would trust your compass. Because even though it's a tiny little thing that you can carry in your pocket, it lines itself up with something bigger than the whole world. And so if you're navigating through your life, what do you look at that possibly could line itself up with something beyond your perception, beyond where you are? Well, you look at the place where your heart is most vulnerable, most open to be moved, most ready for subtle guidance. The place that you're most cracked open is music. And so if you let music teach you how to tune in to the subtle guidance of, sort of like as you're writing a song, you say, oh, that line's good, but you know, ah, this line is better. And how do you know? Well, it feels right. That sense, strengthening that sense. Yes, you take voice lessons, you strengthen your voice. Yes, you take guitar lessons, you strengthen your chops. But mostly what you're practicing is the subtle discernment of better and worse. Like that kid's blindfold game where people are saying, warmer, warmer, colder, freezing, oh, warmer, burning. But this time, instead of listening to the voices of others, you're listening to the subtle voice of your heart say, this feels like my life. How do I know? I haven't even lived it yet. But somehow it feels like it's whispering, this is it. This is where the juice is. This is where the life is. This is where the adventure is. This is where life gets deep and high and interesting and adventurous. And so you follow it, even when your mind is saying, how do you know? When we start writing a song, we get a sense like the song is there waiting, as if it's archaeology, as if we're just uncovering it. And it's the same thing with finding this miraculous sense of wonder and awe that stays with us and gets stronger as we go through decades and decades of our adventure. Eventually, we realize it couldn't have been any other way. This life was waiting for me. And yet, you made it decision by decision. You followed it. You found it. And yet, the reason why it feels like it was always there is because it was. It's the spark in your heart that wrote every song you've ever written. It was the one that said, yeah, that's good, but I don't know, this is better. Trust it. Trust it with everything. The real musicianship, what you're really learning to tune, is that sense of how do I know this is better? And trusting in your own heart. And over thousands of decisions, it leads you home.
Spend my whole life hiding where no soul could ever thrive. I can't live with just surviving. My heart wants to feel alive. Life is change, a change looks frightening. Watch that wind, I've been warned, but I live to feel this lightning. Perfect storm, this perfect storm, here in this perfect storm.
And David, it just seems like I feel fearful right now in my life, in my journey, because I feel like, and I feel like you're so motivated, and I feed off of that. I mean, just it feels hopeful and with a direction, and I feel like I have a blank map with an X on it and no dotted line to lead me where I need to go.
When you say fearful, tell me more about the fear. What is it specifically that when you get fearful, do you remember that feeling when you're in that fear? What does it feel like?
When I get that feeling, the glimmer of hope is always the music, is always the fact that I do know that I want to be a musician, that I will be a musician. But fear is normally money. It's the fact that my savings are falling, and the life that I'm trying to lead is I'm just trying to find food and trying to find a place to live. But and I'm in a foreign state alone with no family, and I just don't know where to go. I don't know which step is the right one and which direction is the right one.
And when the fear speaks about that, does the fear sort of have any scenario, some fearful scenario future that it sort of, where does it dig in? Where do you feel it in your body? How's the fear get you?
The fear gets me when I think that I'll have to get a job that won't be rooted in music, and that my inspiration and my love will fall away, and I'll lose my creativity because I had to get a 9-to-5.
Now, when you imagine that, you don't really imagine getting the job, you imagine having the job, being stuck in the job, and there's that moment in real life where if you were to be in that job, there would have had to be a moment where you kind of decided, okay, I'm going to go get this job. And so you lose faith in the process. You imagine that you're suddenly not yourself, and you imagine that you just do this thing, you just go get this job, because that's what people do.
Yeah.
But you forget that, no, actually, you're you. You're the person who is still here. You're the person who has that subtle guidance. And so if you rethink the scenario about, well, how would you actually go get a job like that? I mean, what would happen? You wouldn't just sort of suddenly betray yourself and say, okay, that's it. Because if you imagine that actual scenario, like the week that would happen, there are so many thousands of other choices. In the fear portrays it as just like it's this switch, it's this black and white, it's A or B. And it's really not. It's thousands of decisions. Like, for example, yes, we need money to survive. And if you look at the whole story, like you ask people who are 90 years old, what would you do differently? Well, of course, when you're 90, it's easy to say, oh, I wouldn't worry so much. I wouldn't work so crazy. I would have time for my dreams. I would play more music. That's easy to say when you're 90. But when you're stuck in the middle of some maddening sort of job that is so much is required of you, it's really hard to say to yourself, what can I let go of? Because you assume that you have to pay for everything you have. Yeah. Luckily, you're 20 years old. You have the choice to lower the overhead until you can afford the ultimate luxury, which is time to do what you love. And there are ways to live remarkably cheap. All it does is it goes against some of your assumptions. Back when I was a street musician, I would be playing, you know, during the lunch hour down around City Hall, and then at night down sort of more where the clubs are, and I'd find a nice little glass doorway with those angled windows that have that nice megaphone sort of sound, and I'd stand in there and I'd have my guitar case open. And I'd count my change and gather up the bills, and I'd realize, okay, well, I'm making way better than working a 9-to-5 minimum wage job, which, you know, when I was real young, that was sort of like, if I wasn't doing music, I would probably go get one of those. So I thought to myself, wait a minute, I'm making better money. I'm working way fewer hours. I'm only working like 4 hours a day, the lunch hour and 3 hours at night, and I'm doing great. The general fears get to us because they stay general. Yeah. And the way to attack the fears is to say to the fears, you're assuming that I'm going to have to buy things that require me to sell my most precious possession, which is my time. So you're talking to yourself and you're saying to yourself, tell me exactly what do you want to buy that's worth your most precious dream? And there's not much on that list.
No.
You can say to yourself, I don't need a car. I could get around. I don't need, you know, brand new clothes. I could be fine with the stuff at the thrift store.
Yeah.
And I don't need this and I don't need that. And pretty soon you say, well, how much money do you need? And you say, well, how much money can you earn? Okay, that works. And then the fears come and they say, yeah, but what about forever? What about when you're 90 years old and you're still doing that? Well, you're forgetting that there's going to be a lot of coincidences that happen between where you are and where you're going when you're 90 years old. It can't possibly be just the same. Like when I was 20 and I was traveling by bicycle and living super cheap, I would take the occasional job, you know, just to get a little money, like picking grapes in France or whatever. But mostly what I was doing was I was playing music and finding things to sing about and getting away from all the things that knew me so that I could find out who I was becoming. And I would live so cheap that it was really the most prosperous time of my life, because I remember having all this time. I remember having all this sense of unbelievable freedom. Traveling by bicycle, you know, you can be gliding down the road and just kind of look back over your shoulder. And I used to just kind of realize that there's no trailer, there's no baggage, there's no strings. It's just the little panniers. It's just the sleeping bag. It's everything that I need. But it's only one of everything that I need. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't have a silverware drawer. I have a spoon. I have a fork. I have a knife. Do I need two knives? No. I have, you know, everything that I need. And I can go anywhere in the world. You go down to the docks if you want to go to New Zealand. And you find someone who's sailing. And you say, I play music. And they say, great, it's a big sea. We need music. Come on. And then you're on a sailing ship, and you're playing music, and you're going to New Zealand. And people say, wow, you must be rich. And you say, yeah, I guess I am. I'm on a sailing ship going to New Zealand.
Yeah.
And so when you realize that there's thousands of decisions involved, then the fear gets dismantled, because it isn't just one decision. Oh, well, the music's not working. I guess I'll go get a job and then just die inside for the rest of my life. No. There's thousands of decisions between those two points.
Yeah.
If you open yourself up to the specifics, then the fear gets blown out of the water. Because when you come to the fear and say, what is it that you want to buy that's worth more than your best dream? Then, no, there's nothing on that list. And so you put into action making the overhead lower. That's how you buy the time. You buy your freedom with the money you don't spend. And you get really good at investing with the money you don't spend in your beautiful dream. And the only thing that's going to make you successful over the other people is that you have time to write those songs while you're sailing to New Zealand, and the other people don't because they got the job.
Yeah.
So little by little, when people come to you 10 years from now and you've got all these songs, what do they feel? What do they get in your music? What they get is, she's got a key to a door that I want. They're caught. They want to know, how come you're not caught? And you're singing it in every song. And what you're singing is this sense of possibility, a sense of wonder, sense of joy. And they think, man, she's lucky. How did she do that? And if they really know how, if they really want to know how, it's nothing miraculous.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a commitment to a constant vigilance of not spending money that takes you further from where you're really going. And so, what else are you afraid of?
I've got time walking down this road. Got a mile and a half to go to see you in the evening. When you take my hand and lead me down the path to where we go, I come undone. Now I feel the wind and I know where it's from. It's your mouth in my ear and you say come, and I'm walking, I glide in my stride. What you whispered, well, it keeps me satisfied. Makes me high. You whispered to me. It's a sound I will always keep with me now forever. When I felt it that first time, I knew that it would change me where I stood. Change me for good. Now I hear the wind and I know where it's from. It's your mouth in my ear and you say come, and I'm walking, I glide in my stride. What you whispered, well, it keeps me satisfied. I've got dreams, they're all I need. I got your sweet memory to take me through the distance. I've lived spring and I've lived fall, and now they wheel me down this hall beneath these lights. But I am all right. Now I feel the wind and I know where it's from. It's your mouth in my ear and you say come, and I'm walking. Now it's far away but you say come, and I'm walking. I glide in my stride. What you whispered, well, it keeps me satisfied. It keeps me satisfied.
There's a lot more to this discussion, and we'll pick it up here next time, but as you can tell, David's got a lot to say on the subject of the creative quest, and I think it applies to a lot more than just songwriters. Really, anyone who's trying to live up to a personal dream can probably find inspiration in this discussion. So I've transcribed it for any interested parties, and you can find it at the website, thats.soundacious.com. Next time, we'll learn more about David's adventures as a young musician, some wisdom he picked up while whitewater rafting, and the secret to becoming a musical mystic. Unsurprisingly, you can find more from David Wilcox at davidwilcox.com and Ali Ferris at aliferris.com. And if you're not sure how to spell either of those, you can find handy links and videos at thats.soundacious.com. Thank you so much for listening. If you like what you hear, you can subscribe through iTunes or Stitcher Radio and never miss an episode. There's a new one every 2 weeks. I hope you'll also consider setting up a recurring payment or making a one-time donation at thats.soundacious.com. As much as I love to make this podcast happen, eventually it will dry up and blow away if no one supports it. I'll be back with part two of this awesome David Wilcox interview in 2 weeks. In the meantime, please take the time to go out and listen to some local music. Those guys need your ears. That Soundacious is a production of the Soundacious Media Group, a tiny little family-owned media conglomerate on the coast of the Gulf of Mexico.